Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 10th of April. Is it that time of year so quickly? I can't believe how fast it's going. It's scary, isn't it? Easter nearly approaching fast. Blink and you'll miss it job. Been off this week down in sunny Cornwall, kicking back and chilling out. What about you, Kev? Have you had a good working week while I've been away?
Yeah, it's been a good working week. We've had lots of conversations with different people. The weather's been stonking hot. It's been 36, 37, 38 degrees. It's cooled off a bit today, thank goodness.
Down to pool office, been working from the pool office.
Yeah, I did yesterday and the day before for an hour or two, I have to be honest. Yeah, pool office, phone, and jumping into the pool for an hour and then jumping out and doing some work. It's been good. The market's ISA season. We put a wee document out there for ISAs, so just different opportunities that were available based on our 12 stocks, or now 14 stocks actually. So yeah, I think there's a little bit more liquidity came into the end of the week in the market. So,
yeah,
all good.
I mean, I haven't really
all
been good. Keeping much of an eye out there, but I did see that on the 6th, there was a bit of an increase in volume on a lot of these stocks. So certainly that I just saw a lot of bed and ISA type trades where you see a certain number sold and then a similar number bought back in. It was very, very easy to tell some of those people who were wanting to bed and ISA those stocks that they love. So good to see. And we talked about this obviously last week, and we thought there would be a bit of an increase in volume, so that's all good. Anyway, we're joined by Martin. It's been a while. Martin Churchow, CEO of Carus Minerals. How are you doing, Martin?
I'm very well, thanks, Phil. Hi, Kev.
Hi, yeah, Martin.
Been a while, hasn't it? Yeah. And I guess in your life, a lot's happened since then in terms of company news. We've had quite a few. But before we go on to discuss that, do you want to give us listeners or even new investors a bit of a recap as to what the Carus Mineral Resources story is all about?
Yeah, Carus Mineral Resources, our licenses are based exclusively in Cyprus. We are a gold, copper exploration and resource development company. We have sort of hitched our wagon to the green energy transition, focusing sort of primarily on the copper. Our strategy is principally aimed at the brownfield sites. There are plenty of those in Cyprus, areas where you've got former mines, and as a consequence of that, you've got dumps, you've got tailings. And because of the incursion from the Turks in 1974, you've got a number of mines where production was sort of curtailed. So you've got multiple different resource types sitting within various brownfield licenses. And we adopted the policy of picking this ground up on the basis that we feel that we partially de-risk our exploration by knowing that we're exploring and looking for new deposits within geology where mines already exist, and therefore, we know that we're in the right geological setting, and also because we know we've got dumps and we've got stockpiles that were produced in the 50s and 60s and early 70s. It's 40 odd years since then. Technology has improved dramatically, and we have an opportunity to extract residual metals from these dump materials. And of course, on top of that, we've got the benefit of the hard rock resources, some of which are, higher grade. This was left when everything shut down in 1974. But then in addition to that, we've got the lower grade resources and the oxides, neither of which were of any particular interest to the miners back in the day. We've got a fair sprinkling of licenses which sort of go from west east across the island on the Greek side of the border. Our focus in the last few months has been on the Trulli project, which was a former producing mine. And that's one where we've entered into a joint venture agreement with Bazant Resources. And we have another option agreement in place with Jubilee Metals, who are doing metallurgical test work with a view, hopefully, to building and running a plant under the terms of a separate joint venture. last week we reported our sort of maiden mineral resource estimate for Truly. We're happy with the numbers, and whilst we're doing that, you know, there's a lot going on the other licenses as well. So it's all good, and you know, everything remains positive from our side.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, to have sunk 72 diamond and open hole percussion drill holes, that's a lot of drilling over, I think, nearly 4,000 metres, isn't it, in total? It's been going on for some time now. Is it nearly a year's worth of drilling there?
But it's actually 9 months, you know, because we didn't actually own the Truly licence. Truly was one of the ones that we acquired within sort of 3 months of listing. So we basically turned it around in 9 months from... you know, a piece of ground with prospects to our first initial resource estimate. And, you know, the numbers are not bad. You know, we're happy with them so far. So 2.7 million tonnes at just over 0.75% copper equivalent, which is roughly 20,000 tonnes of copper metal. Interestingly, you could do another number if you sort of reduce the cutoff and we come out with just under 5 million tonnes at roughly 0.5% copper equivalent. And by doing that, you get more or less the sort of the same amount of copper, but you also then claw in about 30-odd thousand ounces of gold as well. So, you know, from our point of view, from Kerris's point of view, it's a really good foundation on which we can sort of build. In terms of upside for us, there's a lot more to come, I'm sure of that, at Truly. You know, we've got a whole bunch of drill holes that we're still waiting for the results to come back, which is sort of sitting around the apron of the existing geological model and resource now, which should add further tons and tons metal. We know that we've got extensions to the ore body on the sort of immediate extensions, which we didn't realize we had until we did this drill program, which we picked up. We've got all those anomalies, which we've reported previously, that we partially drilled on the sort of 1.5 kilometres out towards Coquina Petra. We know that they carry metal. We've just got to drill them out now. We're going to do, in a month or so's time, we're going to do a ground geophysics program, which hopefully will pick up further targets. And then, of course, we've got Coquina Petra itself, which is a sizable target. And, you know, that had some really impressive gold grades at surface. And the one short hole that we put in underneath picked up, you know, indications of copper. So you know, I think there's a lot more to come. The other thing, of course, to not, you know, forget is that because of the location of Truly, we picked up a number of other licenses, which we've sort of called the satellite projects, which are comfortably within trucking distance. And trucking distance in one of two respects. Possibly if, you know, with slightly lower grade deposits where we're in a position where we can actually have dry pre-concentration on site so that we take something up to, you know, from 1% up to 7%, let's say, contain copper, and we can then truck that across to Truly, and we can process it there in a central plant. Or alternatively, we've got a number of projects that we've identified in places like Anglicides and St. Nicholas, where, you know, St. Nicholas, there's reports there historically of resources with grades in excess of sort of 4 grams per ton gold and plus 1% copper. And the work that we have ourselves done at Anglicides, you know, has been coming back with plus 2% copper and good gold grades as well. Now, some of that material could well be possible for us just to pick that up and take that straight to Truly. I mean, I've sort of internally sort of set a target of 500,000 to 700,000 tons from Anglicides at sort of 2% copper equivalent. Yeah. You know, that's a lot of copper.
Sure.
And that will have a significant impact on you know, on the sort of the financials. So it's exciting. It's interesting from the point of view of the guys that are on the ground. We're now comfortable. We're not you know, sitting back and sort of relaxing. We're now comfortable that we've got something upon which we can build. You know, 20,000 tons of copper metal in the ground is a pretty decent start.
Yeah.
And it's not as if we're in a position where we're now going to go out and start looking at greenfield sites, trying to find the next 5, 10, 15,000 tons of copper metal to add to that resource. We've got the targets lined up. We've partially drilled them. We've sampled them. We know where they are. It's now just a case of getting the drill rig back on site and we crack on. I mean, we're drilling at Anglicides now. You know, we had some native copper at 7 meters depth in a hole the other day, which was fantastic. I mean, looks really interesting. A few more holes at Anglicides, you know, a week, 10 days, 2 weeks maybe. And then we come straight back to Truly and we pile into the drilling again there.
So will that be more infill drilling to try and increase the upgrade or upgrade the resources so far? I mean, and also things like the mining application and licenses. Can you talk us through the sort of like the roadmap for the next, say, 6 months to a year of how things might sure. may play out?
Yeah, of course. There will be a little bit of infill drilling. There always is. And, that's no bad thing because invariably that will increase the grade and we'll see how that develops. We've got all those holes, as I said, which is the peripheral where we need to get the results back from those. And there may well be some more infill to do around that as well. And then we step out and we start drilling the other targets. The test work's going well. I'm really comfortable that we've got all bases covered with the test work based on my, you know, frequent discussions with Jubilee. You know, effectively, we've got three different resource types. We've got the gold oxides, we've got the copper oxides, and we've got the copper gold sulfides. And we were always confident that the copper gold sulfides would be pretty easily processed. And we know that we can use sort of standard flotation, which is, you know, a nice, relatively cheap plant to build. It's not expensive to run. You know, it doesn't use any chemicals or anything that's you know particularly unpleasant to use. The copper oxides, the work that's been done so far is really interesting because we potentially have two options for the copper oxides. We can actually use the same plant we use for sulfides, and we just use a process that temporarily kids the oxides that they are actually sulfides, so we can float them off. With the lower grade oxides, the work that we've done so far suggests that we can very easily put those onto a heat bleach, and the recoveries look very good. The gold oxides, obviously, you know, we don't want to be in an environment where we're using cyanide if we can avoid it. And it looks, based on provisional work that's been done, that the gold oxides can be recovered, or the gold can be recovered from the oxides using another sort of lixiviant rather than cyanide. And the recoveries look the same. The cost of the process looks pretty much identical. So the good thing is we're not going to be leaving resources in the ground. We will be able to recover copper and gold pretty much from everything down to, you know, quite low grades, which is really encouraging. And then I guess, you know, the important thing from the shareholder point of view in terms of timing is, you know, I've been talking to you about further drilling and all the rest of it. You know, the implication might be that not much is going to happen until we've done the next round of drilling. The reality is Bazant Resources, our joint venture partner from the mining side, is now sufficiently comfortable with the first 2.7 million tons of resource for them to start the design and the mine planning process. That's obviously important. It's good for us because as soon as we've got some more definitive numbers from Jubilee, it means that we can start assigning dollars and cents to, you know, the costs and dollars and cents to the margins and working out how much, you know, this project is going to make. And we're not too far away from being in a position to do that. I think we're very close to the point now where we know what sort of plant configuration we want, but, you know, I'm not going to second guess Jubilee. They're the experts. I think we're comfortable with the mine plan. You know, it's something we've been discussing on an ongoing basis. What remains now is for us to sort of engage further with the resource consultant so that we can get a much firmer idea on, you know, the depth to which we can mine and the strip ratios and things. The good thing, you know, most from what we, you know, we know ourselves in-house, of course, all down one side, and you guys have seen the pit, all down one side, there's no stripping because as you strip, what you're doing is you're basically taking the gold oxides off the top, and then as you push back, you're then taking the sulfides out from underneath those gold oxides. And then when you push all the way back, you basically get to the edge of the hill and, you know, the job's done. You've taken out what you need. Going in the opposite direction, as you know, down one side, you've got the entrance to the pit, so there's nothing to push back to there. Going the other side, there will be a little bit of stripping to do, but on the sort of the high wall side, most of that is dump material, which we'll take off anyway, and we'll stick that through the plant. So yeah, look, I mean, that looks pretty good. So we're now working our way to the point where we're now refining everything and getting all the data we need to be able to complete the sort of the more thorough scoping study. And once we've got that scoping study, which is not that far away, we're in a position to submit our application for the mining license. In the interim, you know, we're communicating with the community. They're on board. You know, they've been given multiple opportunities to object, and there have been no dissenters. Interestingly, the community a few years ago actually elected to take ownership of the mine and the surrounding ground from the state. And the reason they did that was because they wanted to ensure that the community benefited from what they recognized to be a resource. So, you know, they're in favor of us doing something with Truly, which is great. I mean, it's nice to have them have them on side, you know, and things will improve, I mean, dramatically. You know, you've got all these old dumps that have been sitting there since the 60s, which are sort of leaking sulfides out onto farmland. Well, those sulfides we're going to reprocess.
From your experience with dealing with the authorities, that they're quite you know, helpful in that, you know, with Carus, in terms of no delays. You're not expecting any kind of protests against these mining license applications.
No. I mean, you know, I think if there'd been any serious concerns, we'd have known something about it by now. Sure. You know, the people that we acquired these licenses from have been working on the project for a number of years, and they have made a point of getting on with the community. You know, we employ a number of people in the community. We take their advice on everything that we do. You know, we have a good relationship with the local farmers and things. And some of those farmers are actually going to get land back, which, you know, the previous operators in the 60s dumped a whole load of material on that farmland, and you know, they'll get that back. And then, of course, you know, we're looking at some really interesting options for a closure plan, which will benefit the village as well. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that we're considering at this stage, but ultimately, that's a decision that we'll make jointly with the community.
And the interesting thing, having been there, is this is, you know, the report that came out to say there's 5 million tons of, roughly 5 million, 4.9 million tons of stuff, if you like. I can't even say it's all rock because it's not. It's a combination of many, many different things. This really is probably the tip of the iceberg at Truly, because we really haven't talked about the elephant in the room, which is 1.5 kilometres further away and possibly connected to Truly. So do you want to say a bit about that?
It's actually very interesting because you've got Truly and you know that you've got something there. So you know, step back and say, right, now I'm going to start exploring and I need to add value for shareholders. Now you've got two choices. You can either, you know, throw the Hail Mary, go for broke and put walls at sort of 200 meter, 300 meter sort of spacings all the way along what's effectively just over 2 kilometers a strike and hope that you hit something. And if you don't, you're going to lose shareholder interest because they're going to go, well, you know, he's put 10 ball holes in and seven of them missed. So, you know, it was always our intention to start with Truly because, you know, we know that we're going to hit some dirt there, which is payable. And therefore, you know, we're adding value right from day one. Where you have to be careful is that you don't get involved in sort of keyhole exploration, where you put in a whole bunch of drill holes and then you start putting drill holes next to drill holes next to drill holes, which might give you, you know, sexy looking numbers when it comes to a press release, but it's actually adding nothing to the value of the deposit because you're not adding tons and you're not adding tons of copper either. So we've now, and don't forget, whilst we were doing Truly, we were also putting holes, you know, using percussion, which was a lot cheaper, but it was a good sort of scouting tool. We were drilling all of those other, or a lot of those other targets on that 1.5 kilometer strike distance. So now we're comfortable that we've got, you know, 4.9 million tons under our belt. We can now step out and we could start drilling all of these other targets that we've got along that sort of 1.5 Ks of strike. And the interesting thing here is we've got Gossens that we identified at surface. You know, I mean, it's not rocket science picking up those. We've drilled them. Yep, they've got value. Great. We can go back now and we can drill them a bit more thoroughly and work out what we've got and start to build a tonnage on each of those. We've then got Coquina Petra itself, which is a really interesting deposit. You know, at this stage, I don't know whether Coquina Petra is going to be a gold project or a copper gold project. I don't know. Let's see what the drilling tells us. What we do know is that at surface, there are some very interesting gold numbers that we've got from, you know, the sampling that we've done today. Now, whilst I've said that we've got those Gossens, all the way through that 1.5K of strike length, you've got a lot of faulting, which is sort of classic in this sort of geological setting. So it's almost like imagine a step ladder running from Truly all the way through to Coquina Petra. And each one of those blocks between, you know, the rungs on the ladder is another ore block potentially. And some have been lifted up, some have been dropped down. Some have been lifted up, some have been dropped down. And you go through all the way through to Coquina Petra. So there will be some areas of mineralization there that we have no indication that it's there at all. And that's where we're going to be using the ground geophysics in a month or so's time to pick up, one, pick up those structures, and two, pick up those other targets. It's going to be a really interesting exercise to see what sort of tonnage we can add.
Just for the people who don't know that much about Keras and the different options that you have on Cyprus, Truly and the surroundings like Truly and Anglicides and St. Nicholas, I think, are all in fairly close proximity, yeah?
Yeah.
But then we go up into the sort of slightly more mountainous area and tell us a little bit more about that, because there were originally 13 or 14 mines up there, I think.
There were, yeah. We've got sort of two principal projects on the sort of the outliers. One is, which I'll deal with first because we put out an RNS a couple of weeks ago on this one, and that's the Marla project. Marla was an old pyrite mine, and which we've acquired. We do have a modest copper gold resource. You know, it's possibly 300,000-500,000 tons just below surface at roughly 1% copper, and it's got, you know, decent gold values in it as well, which was left behind by the previous people in the 70s. And we've also got a load of dumps, and we've been doing some sampling of the dumps and have got some really interesting gold numbers out of those dumps. You know, over 50% of our samples came back above sort of 0.5 gram gold. Now, we were only able to use a hand auger, which got down to a meter and a half. These dumps are, you know, go a lot deeper than that. And in all likelihood, because it's usually the case with these sort of projects, grade can increase that depth. And that's usually reflecting an improvement over time in the processing, you know, technology and things that you're using. So potentially, we've got a standalone gold resource sitting there. We need to do some test work, but I don't see any reason at all why we shouldn't be able to recover gold from that. We've also got that copper resource as well that's sitting there just underground. And we've got the guys up on site who are doing the exploration now, again, looking at exactly the same sort of structural information I was mentioning earlier at Coquina Petra, looking at a whole bunch of other targets that they've identified. So that's really, you know, that was not one of our sort of priorities, but that's really starting to look very interesting. The really big project we have is Calavasos. Calavasos, the area that we have of Calavasos, as you said, it hosts 13, 14 former producing mines. And these mines were running at grades, you know, sort of 3% copper plus. They've largely mined out the high-grade pods, but they've left all the stockwork mineralization behind, which is the sort of 1% type copper mineralization. They also generated, when they were mining, produced a lot of dumps. And we have sampled quite a few of those dumps, and they've all been generally coming back, you know, in the region of 0.5% copper and 0.5 gram per ton gold, which is very nice for dumps. You know, we're very happy with that sort of number. So, you know, again, but on a much bigger scale, potentially, we're in a situation with Calavasos where we have some easily accessible, low mining cost, good, you know, easily recovered dumps where we can extract gold and copper. So it's a nice, easy way into future processing at Calavasos. And of course, samples of those, I should add, have been with Jubilee for some time, and they're doing all the test work, looking at sort of leachable copper and gold extraction and things. So that work's being done in the background. And now we're starting to get back onto site to start to look at drilling out some of the hard rock resources as well, which are, you know, you've been to the Mavridia pit, you guys, you've seen the mineralization sitting in the bottom of the pit. Yeah. The where we were standing in the fresh air there, that was the sort of 3% plus high-grade body that was taken out, and then the cushion of stockwork gold copper mineralization that it was sitting on was the material we were standing on top of. That's ready to drill. The guys have been up. They have found a few really interesting targets that we're waiting for the assays and things to come back, you know, and we'll report on those in due course. But we're quietly confident that we've got a very nice project that's starting to build quietly at Calavasos. For those people that don't know Keras very well, with the Trudy project that has, you know, been the biggest part of the cash burn, 50% of all direct exploration costs have been are attributable to our joint venture partners, so we get that cash back in our treasury. Jubilee is picking up a pretty substantial amount of the costs that we incurred collecting samples for them, and the sample analyses that have been done. So that money's, you know, coming back in as well. We're in a pretty good place from that point of view. We've got cash, we've got enough to continue drilling keep adding tons of copper and ounces of gold.
Yeah. I was just looking, Martin, at the first time you actually came on the Sunday Roast, and it was about, I think it was like May the 1st or May the 2nd of last year. So it's basically less than a year, but it feels like a lot of there has been a lot has happened in that time, in those 11, 12 months. I mean, how happy is it? Of course you're happy, you're pleased with the way things are going, but do you think you've achieved more than you anticipated you would in those 11 months, looking at where you are now?
I would like to have been a bit further along, you know, downstream with Trudy and also with the other projects. But, you know, it's the same for everybody. You know, we were constrained by what we could do. Sure. We were fortunate in as much as during the sort of the lockdown, you know, the bulk of our personnel are Cypriot and they're based on the island. So they were able to get around, but there was, you know, we couldn't get samples anywhere or anything like that. So yeah, it would be nice to be a bit further down the track. But having said that, if you'd asked me last May, would I be happy talking to, you know, in 9 months' time, if I had 20,000 tons of copper under the belt and 30,000 ounces of gold, I'd say, yeah, I think
exactly
we'd be pretty happy.
And one JV and also another potential one, you know, with Jubilee, you know, you're still yet to come. So I think from what you've achieved in those 11 months, as you say, with the constraints there, you know, obviously there's been a big global pandemic, which has obviously knocked, you know, delays everything, doesn't it, as we know, supply chain issues, and also that the element of the fact that, you know, there's also assay result. I mean, every CEO we talk to from mining companies, they're at the mercy of, you know, these assay labs as well, which is hindering a lot of progress.
I think the other point to make is of course, you know, you have Colin Bird on here, and you know, of course Colin is with Bazan, and you know, we're picking up some really good tips off him with respect to, you know, the sort of small miner philosophy, that has given us a lot of encouragement to go back and look at stuff in Cyprus that we were sort of, you know, originally may have dismissed, because we think, actually, hang on, we can start doing something with this now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're looking at that sort of small miner philosophy and some of the, you know, some of the clever things that you can do today. And of course, this exactly the same thing applies with our interaction with Jubilee. It's music to my ears when I sort of talk to them and say, look, we've got X, Y, and Z. I'm assuming we can't do anything with that. They say, well, no, hang on, send us some samples. I'm sure we can extract metal from that. You know, which is great. So it's enabled us to be a lot, I wouldn't say braver, but, you know, we can dig a lot deeper and look at things that we wouldn't necessarily have spent too much time on.
So do you see that yourselves and Basant and Jubilee are going to make a very good team to extract what needs to be extracted in Cyprus?
Yeah, I do. You know, we get on well with all of the guys, and you know, it's so far it's actually been sort of plain sailing. We enjoyed working with them. I can honestly say there's been no sort of disputes or anything, or sort of treading on toes or anything of that order. Everyone knows their roles. Everybody's, you know, very free with their information. Everything's being disseminated and properly the way it should be done. So yeah, it's a happy camp.
The big question everybody probably wants answered is, when's Jubilee and yourself going to sign on the dotted line, do you think?
Good question. You know, it does depend on when they complete their test work. I don't think they're too far away. You know, I think there's a bit more that needs to be done, particularly with the gold lixiviant process that they're using. And then I also, before we sign, I do, you know, I am keen for them to give me enough information that I can have meaningful data to go to the environmental consultant with, for him to, you know, complete the baseline study and the impact assessment. So that might sort of add a bit of time, but, you know, we're only a few months away.
So at Truly, Martin, the either 4.9 million tons or the 2.7 million tons, whichever one you want to use, how much roughly as a percentage of that is easily accessible? In other words, there's no physical mining involved. It's literally pick it up and take it to the plant.
You've got the stockpiles, you've got the tailings, and you've got the sort of the low-grade waste dumps, which may actually be bigger than we realize at the moment. The reason I say that is because it's very difficult to drill right the way down into these, because you sort of hit quite large rocks that the percussion rig can't get past. But it's well over a million tons is free dig material.
Looking at that process now, if we just look at Keras and say you've got 20,000 tons of copper in the ground that's going to be able to be processed, and you've got 30,000 ounces of gold, and your value, I mean, I'm guessing that the sale value of those items is around $250 million US. Okay. Yeah. And you're currently worth £7.3 million as a company. So obviously you're going to share that amongst Passant and amongst possibly Jubilee as time goes by. So how do you feel now that you've said this to the market, you know, that effectively this tonnage of copper and gold is worth this much money, and yet this is your share value, if you like?
Look, I think part of the problem that we suffer from, and I'm sort of stepping aside from your sort of the main point of your question, but I will come back to it. Part of the problem is because we are, you know, a microcap company. Therefore, it is always difficult to get visibility. And you know, you can spend a lot of money on PR and all the rest of it, but there comes a point in time where you have to sort of say, right, that's the amount we're going to spend, and now it's basically got to be results driven, and you know, we have to try and get the share price up on the back of what we you know, we can discover. And I, you know, hopefully people will start to see now, you know, particularly in the next few months when we're able to start putting, you know, dollar figures to some of these things with sort of preliminary economic assessments and things like that. People can start to, you know, add value. And, you know, don't forget, you take something like Anglicides, where I'm looking at, you know, I'm setting ourselves a target of 750,000 ton at 2% equivalent. You know, that's another 15,000 tons of copper. And if you do the maths, it all starts to add up pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's another $150 million sale price. Yeah.
Precisely. And then, you know, and then because you've got a plant, you're now in a position where you might have a 250 or 200 or 300,000 ton little deposit that's sitting out there on its way to, you know, on that 1.5K stretch to Coquina Petra, that, you know, in under normal circumstances would stay there forever. The fact that you've got stones thrown away from a fully operating plant that sort of paid for itself means that, you know, your margin is substantial on each of those little projects that you or little deposits that you start to bring in. So yeah, we're significantly undervalued. I don't think there's much doubt about that. You know, and we're still pretty well cashed up. And we're spending our money wisely. You know, the money goes in the ground. You know, and if you look at our board, you know, we're not overpaid. You know, we don't have.
You said that nearly laughing, Martin.
We don't have.
Give this man a pay rise. He's not getting paid very much.
We don't have head officers. You know, we really are lean and mean. And the guys on the ground are the same. You know, they're exactly the same. They know the drill.
The other thing, looking at it, I mean, just looking through some of the numbers, and I was going to go through the capital structure because I think it's something that is really useful for listeners anyway, is that 64 million shares outstanding is not a lot. And actually, since you came to market about a year ago, I think it was the 19th of March last year was when you were admitted to the main market, the standard list main market. So this is not an AIM share. You've not got the, you know, the Nomad involved. But anyway, the point I'm making is that you came with around 62, 63, you know, it wasn't much more than that. So this is not like it's been the usual dilute issue shares fund, you know, that sort of thing. Yes, there was another round, I think, at back end of last year when there was a small amount raised in the form of a placing. But other than that, as you say, it's not run as a lifestyle company. You're very lean. And, you know, the share price, when you look at it, I think you came to market around a 10p with the initial placing or the initial raise. And it's actually not moved. Yes, it went up to the sort of late 20s, 30s, but now it's 14p to buy. I mean, but look at what you've achieved. There's no sense in the value of the company right now. It's 9.2 million on the cap. And it just doesn't make, you can't compute that.
The silence says everything, I think.
I think you put that very succinctly, yeah.
Yeah, say no more. Yeah. I mean, what I'm looking at now from the figures you're just giving me there with $250 million of metal in ground, $150 million coming from the other thing, what was it, Anglicides? That's $450 million. Let's say there's $100 million between, you know, the 1.5 kilometers to Cunina Patra, is it? You've got $500 million of in-ground metal that isn't going to need a mine constructed to get it out. It's already there. You might have to, you know, dig a few holes, but basically it's close to surface. Everything is going to be dug out and you're going to have a plant there. Now, if that can't make money and make, you know, Keras Minerals several million pounds a year, then, you know, something's going to be seriously wrong.
I think you're right. I mean, I you know, comes with the usual sort of health warning, of course, that, you know, we still got to finish the drilling at Anglicides, but from what we see, definitely looks the tons are there, and we've drilled these anomalies on the way out to Cunina Patra, and we've hit decent numbers. So there's no reason why we shouldn't add, you know, further tons as we go along. So yeah, it's and you're right, and of course, the other thing to bear in mind is that the bar keeps getting lowered, because once you've got truly up and running and you've got your plant paid for, that's a whole bunch of sort of you know, capex that sort of comes off, and you know, we've got no other debt or anything, anything else that you find, you know, you can start looking, you can start lowering the cutoff grades, and you can start looking at raising the strip ratios and doing whatever to take slightly, you know, more expensive feedstock to mine. Because you know, you're now basically just down to the operating costs of running a plant and mining.
The share price is massively undervalued just on Truly. And actually, we've got Calavasos, which is many factors the size of Truly, to be added to this. And it's not like it's, you know, hundreds of kilometers away. It's I don't know how far away it is, but it's only 20 or 30 kilometers when we drove it anyway.
Yeah, look, I think we, you know, with regard to Calavasos, we could probably have done better in terms of the way we've sort of promoted Calavasos. But it's a tricky one because, you know, 14 former producing mines, where do you start? I mean, you can bog shareholders down in detail and you know, give them all the names of all the different mines and everything, and you just we're giving them too much information. So yeah, hopefully now that we've got guys who are up there, you know, sort of putting in the hard yards and doing all the sampling and things, we can actually start to look at Calavasos in a bit more detail and elaborate, you know, select key projects out of there and start to give shareholders a bit more of a sort of a flavour of and the scope that we have up there, which, as you say, is substantial.
I've got Phil's investment cases ready.
Okay, good, Phil.
Main market, low market cap, close to IPO price, potentially multiple $100 million assets, mining license application to be submitted in a safe jurisdiction of Cyprus, one joint venture and a second potential joint venture. It's not a lifestyle company. Think Arkwright from Open All Hours, and buy it now, whatever you do.
Thank you for coming on, Martin. I think that says it all.
Martin Churchill, CEO of Keras Minerals. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks very much, guys.
And knowing what your opinion of Keras Minerals is, but do you want to give us an opinion of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously been an explorer, which is fast moving towards being a producer. Don't want to give timelines, but I think in the not too distant future, we're going to be producing copper and gold revenues from this, especially from Truly. I mean, you and me have both been there, and it's pretty obvious it's not a hard ask to put a plant there and get it going. And the potential then to go along that strike for 1.5 kilometers is vast. And from what Martin was saying, there are lots of other close opportunities that are going to add to the total take as well. And then, you know, that's the baby. Calavasos is the daddy, if you like. So Calavasos is going to be huge. to say the thing's only valued at £8 or £9 million right now just seems ridiculous. I was saying this to somebody else the other day. I think that resource plays are going to double, triple, maybe quadruple and more for some of them in the next period of time, because basically the stocks haven't gone up. And if anything, they've gone down when the actual resource values or to buy these things has rocketed. And there's been a total disconnect. The small cap stocks have gone down while the resource values have been going up. So there's a total disconnect, and it has to happen, you know? Yeah. So it's going to come, I think.
Good.
So yeah,
I think it's, I concur with all that. Moving on to another undervalued gold play, actually, this one, pure gold play, is Conroy Gold. We're just starting at the beginning of the week on Monday. There was an RNS out there acknowledging prospecting licenses in Longford Down Massif. Three new prospecting licenses granted, gold and base metal potential licenses to be transferred to the JV company and JV holdings in Longford Down Massif to reach circa 1,000 square kilometres. Do you want any comments on that one?
Yeah, the market hasn't got it, has it? I mean, the market just truly hasn't got the size and the potential of this company. It has been messing about trying to find this gold for 15 plus years. It's finally got it. It's finally got a joint venture with a Fortune 500 company in Demir Export. It's finally just been paid €1 million for the privilege. They're going to have to earn in spending €10 million plus. It's got a market cap, 12, 13 million pounds, and potentially 20 to 22 million ounces of gold. Now, let that just settle in. That is currently 4 or 5 times the size of Greatland Gold, okay, in terms of what they have already got in their JORC. It already has 500,000 ounces on its JORC report. It's in a good jurisdiction in Ireland. All the licenses have been transferred to the joint venture, and they're going to drill 3,000 meters in the next month. The Broken Oak, which came out, I think, on Thursday, I think it was, has £1.68 as its first target. After the drilling of the 3,000 meters, which is going to happen in the next 2 months. And it currently sits at what, 30 something pence, 33p?
Yeah, it's a 13.9, just about 14 million market cap. So I think the market, when this one goes off, it will be like fireworks, I think.
Yeah, there's only 39 million shares, and they're pretty tightly held. So as was it Paul Johnson when we interviewed him there, who's a TR1 holder with his wife, from Power Metal Resources, you know, this is going to be in the pounds. I have no doubt, no matter what the situation is, there's gold in this situation. They're going to find it, increase the amount on the JORC, and it's going to be worth several times what it is now.
It's only a matter of time. I think the patient will be rewarded. Those who sit and hold and believe in this story will surely be will be rewarded, and we're going to be going out to site, which I'm looking forward to at the end of April. So that's all booked and ready to go. We'll be doing a site visit and taking some photos and tweeting from Clontibret. So that'll be something to look forward to. So moving on to Tuesday now, there was a RNS for Sovereign Metals, one that we've kind of mentioned them. Obviously, we mentioned them last week when we talked to CMET, Capital Metals, because they're in the rutile space. The RNS.
They're in the erectile dysfunction market.
Yeah, erectile dysfunction. I think it is. I mean, what this is like? Literally a Carlsberg RNS. The RNS was titled 1.8 billion ton JORC resource confirms Cassia as the largest rutile deposit ever discovered. Now let that one sink in. And it moved. I mean, it was sat around the sort of 30p mark, and actually, it was quite interesting because there was a telltale sign on this, and we discussed this with the CCO. There was an ASX, because it's dual listed, it's on the Australian Stock Exchange as well. It was a trading halt announced at something like, I don't know, the day before the RNS came out. So it was in, also there was a chance for people to go, oh wow, you know, why else would a stock suspend or halt trading? Is because the mother of all news was due. So people, I looked on LSE and people were loading up going, oh, but it can only mean one thing. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be a big upgrade in the JORC. And sure enough, 7 a.m. lands and bang, that 1.8 billion ton JORC resource confirming Cassia as the world's largest rutile deposit. So, yeah, comments on that, what your thoughts on it and the valuation?
Yeah, well, an interview is coming for this one, isn't it? We're going to be putting it out for this in the future. But one of the references or silly comments in the broker note that came out was, and it's just come out, so if you want to check that one out, we'll probably put it out over the next few days as well in all the groups, that the amount of rutile and graphite that they found is equivalent to 26 million ounces of gold discovery.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's all on surface digging it up.
Yeah.
Like, let that sink in. That's five times now Greatland Gold.
Yeah.
So, not,
I mean, just to add a little bit more to impact into the RNS, the second line of it was updated mineral resource estimate confirming Kasir as the world's largest rutile deposit and the second largest graphite deposit ever discovered as well. I mean, phenomenal.
That's a lot of pencils that you can make out of that, I tell you.
Yeah. So that was a good one. And obviously we'll bring a good pod. We're going to bring a podcast with Sovereign Metals in the coming weeks or the coming week. So we'll look out for that one. I think it's massively under the radar. We were looking yesterday at the, the number of posts on the bulletin boards, the reactions to some of it. And there's not many people talking about it. So it's very, very under the radar.
You know, it's going to go on a journey, but I think a very exciting journey. So it's one to look out for, I think.
So the next one I want to talk about was what was announced on Wednesday. And then if this isn't a telltale sign, then, shoot me now. Glencore Resources, Brez, is pleased to announce that it's going to host a shareholder conference on Monday at midday UK time. Okay, so midday UK time Monday to discuss the company's updated JORC mineral resource. So basically they're telling you that there's a JORC update coming on yes. Monday, right? So
shock horror. Shock it horror. Didn't come out on Friday. So then yeah. What day is it going
to
come out?
So you've had approximately 48 hours to load up on Brez ahead of the JORC update, basically.
So if you haven't, it's your own fault, basically, because they told you.
Yeah, you're not going to get chance Monday morning at 7 a.m. basically when it comes out.
You are going to get chance, but you're going to pay a bit more, I think. And the reality is that, again, that's a hell of a resource, isn't it?
Massive resource. And I like the fact they're going to be in production in the, next year. That's the aim, is to start very small, modular, and build it up. 25,000 tons, isn't it? The first plant.
Yeah, it's graphite as well, isn't it? So it's like, again, what we're talking about here is EV batteries and all the other needs of graphite, because there are huge numbers of requirements for this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you don't just need the base metals, you need the graphite. There's more graphite in a battery than there is anything else.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Brez is going to have a good time. And when we're talking about graphite, it probably brings us quite neatly onto the whole coal situation.
Yeah.
We've had Contango had first coal. We didn't really talk about it last week, but they had first coal there in Lobo, is it? Or Lubu, or whatever they call it. In Lubu in Zimbabwe. Massive, massive resource, like billions of tons of coal. And they've got offtake agreements that they're talking to, or offtakers they're talking to, I think, in South Africa. The wash plant should be starting to be built this next few months, and be ready to have washed coal in the next period of time, which then they can start selling. And basically, this is a gearing up story, if you think about it. I mean, it's really totally de-risked now. The coal's there. They're basically going to be digging it out the ground, washing it, selling it, and making money. And on top of that, they've got the gold project in Mali. I think Carl talked about that's where he was headed after Zimbabwe. And then again, on the coal situation, I was going to say then on the coal train, we're talking about Ben, and it's like choo-choo, should be coming fairly shortly. I think they've got to get the last inspection sorted out, and then there should be a big train full of coal on regular basis leaving the station, and probably $4 million or more landing in the bank account every time they send a train, I think is the basic deal, or every month, maybe not every train. Anyway, Ben is going to be very exciting in the next while, because it should just become this huge cash cow that we've all talked about.
Yeah, I mean, Ben for me has been just such an excellent chair. It's probably been one of the best I've ever been, you know, really seen in terms of the performance. Obviously, solid IPO, 10p. It's tested a pound, 99p high. It hasn't broken through, but I think it's only a matter of time. It finished Friday at like 91p as an uncrossing trade. I've been sharing some of the videos from the site of the wash plant and actually seeing the washed coal in the actual wash plant, which is fantastic to see. So it's great to see these companies actually delivering what they say they're going to do. You know, Adam's always been that man who's under promise and over deliver, and he's done that. He's delivered, pretty much on time all the way, exactly what he said he was going to do. So yeah, very exciting. And again, at the end of April, beginning of May, we've booked the flights. We're going to go to Ben's Creek in West Virginia. That's something to look forward to and actually see the wash plant.
4 weeks today, we will be in New York.
Yeah. We're going to have a look around Wall Street, do the financial district, and then head down on a road trip to West Virginia. And obviously, we're going to have, I think there's a couple of investors who are going to be joining us as well. So if anybody wants to come to site who's listening, then please reach out to us. You know, obviously make your own way over, but we'll meet us there for sure, and we'll buy you a few drinks, obviously Coca-Cola for Kev, but anything a bit stronger, I'm your man. And looking forward to it. But I mean, I've seen some videos of the chief financial officer on site as well, who's been there, and he's in, you've seen them in the little low carts, like going underground. So you better get your get running, Kev, because I don't know whether we're both of us, you know, whether we're actually going to fit into those overalls.
I'm not sure I'm going to fit in those overalls, and my claustrophobia is definitely not going to fit in those overalls.
So what you're saying is you're not going to be up for going into the mine.
I'll take the photographs. We'll see. But I mean, from an investment case, we're just going down this story of producing, you know, probably in terms of $100 million a year in EBITDA. You've got to be talking about 8 to 10 as a PE on that amount. So you should be talking at 10. £750 million valuation or £600 million valuation. And I think we're currently at £300 million. Yeah. So it's got a long, 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 long way to go. And that really is only the first stage of production. The other one that I was going to mention was EME, Imperium. Obviously, the drill bits started, I think, or about to start. And, will they hit oil is the question. It seems like everybody's almost certain they're going to hit oil, but let's see. That's going to be an exciting next 7 to 14 days.
It's always one. It's one that I tend not to sort of dabble too much in oil and gas stocks these days, just because of the whole, you know, flip of a coin, really, isn't it? It's a binary outcome. It's either a commercial well or it's not a commercial well. You know, that's the way I look at it. It's either a duster or it's the mother of all. It's a mother load. So, and I think the chance of success on this one is something like 40 to 50%, which is actually very high. I don't think you can get much more than 40 to 50% as a geological chance of success in these wells. We've talked about this in the past, so I'm very confident that they are going to hit. But as you say, for me, putting, you know, obviously you'd have to put in a small position, but I know some people who are very, very, very heavily loaded in their portfolios on this one. And I'm just concerned. I don't want to see that duster. I hate it because I've seen 80%, 90% wiped off a stock's valuation on a single duster. And it's not funny. I mean, what it does offer, obviously, is a great opportunity to load up if you can buy in on that drop in the morning, because generally they do recover quite well. But look at ADV Energy as an example. That is that a lot of people got burnt on that ADV Energy stock about 2 or 3 months. Yeah, it was the beginning of the year, probably end of January. Everybody was loaded up. I know people had £500,000 in there and they lost it. And it literally went from, I think it was about 5-6p down to sort of 0.2 or something. It literally dropped 80-85%. And John Story, of course, was loaded in that one, wasn't he? And I think he lost a fortune, unfortunately.
The interesting thing, coming back to Imperium, is that they've got this gas deal that they're also going to be doing. And is it Dungai or something like this? Don't ask me to pronounce it because I'm crap with names anyway. But basically, from what I've heard and read and understood, that a very, very large part of the current market cap of that company should be covered by this deal. So I almost think you've got a bit of a free hit with this. I don't think it's going to drop in the way that you're talking about, even if they don't get the oil. But yeah, we have to say it would be sensible if it starts to really rocket that you take some off the table and wait for the decision on some of it, you know. But that's people's choices, obviously. The last thing I was going to talk about really was the FSA, Food Standards Agency, has finally come out with getting its act together with the whole CBD thing. Both Chill and Life, the two we're looking at in the past, have had the oils and consumables passed to the next stage. Some press coming out saying all sorts of rubbish.
Did you read that? I've just read the Times article this morning. Have you read it?
Yeah. Shocking. With a picture of the boxer guy as well.
Yeah, but the crazy part of that is, right, they're saying that there is going to be a lot of companies who are going to have to pull their product from the shelf, even in some of the Boots range and Holland & Barrow, okay? They haven't been licensed. If you're not on the list, you've not been fully approved, you will have to remove your product from the shelf, okay? Now, there's one product on there that we've talked about in the past, CBX Cellular Goods, okay? Now, they're not on the list and haven't actually, if you read the article, they're actually referenced Cellular Goods because David Beckham's obviously referenced in the article. And what the worrying part of that is CBX are reselling or rebranding the Pure Is range, which is a McCoy range, CMH. And actually, they have been approved. So they've got the articles all wrong. I fear that what's going to happen on Monday morning is CBX is going to get absolutely sold off on that basis of the article. And that's wrong because it's misinformation.
Yeah. But even the pictures and stuff were misinformation because there was Life picture of our ex-world champion, whatever his name is, Anthony Joshua, in the article, I think. And effectively, Life has been accepted. You know, it's okay. And none of their products were delisted. And the same with Chill. They were all more than happy to go to the next stage. All the paperwork was in place, and now they will go to another level of testing, and then they will be officially accepted. I think in Chill's case, they're waiting for the official acceptance before they launch their products completely in the UK, I think. In terms of Life, they've been selling them for a good while already. In fact, many years, I think. And they have in-house testing and all sorts of things already, I think, which is much more than most of the companies involved. So, yeah, it should be seen as extremely good news. But it wasn't really accepted that way in the market because Life's been battered by other circumstances. And Chill also, just there's been no news. So, the same situation. So, from the lows that these companies are at, and I'm talking about CBD and these type of things in general, there's got to be some bargains out there. You've got to obviously choose the right ones, but there's some bargains out there.
Let's talk about, there's one that listed, but we're moving on to Friday now. There was a newcomer to the market.
Yes.
Aura Renewable Acquisitions, is ARA.L is the ticker. And they're actually joined the standard segment of the official list. So they're the main market effectively. And what they're going to do is they're going to pursue opportunities to acquire businesses in the renewable energy sector. And they're going to intend to consider opportunities within the renewable energy, focus on businesses operating in the global renewable energy sector supply chain, particularly in wind, solar, biomass, which is all hot topic. I mean, we've talked about hydrogen plays in the past, hydrogen supply chain ranging from raw materials, resourcing to power generation. And the thing that got me really interested in this one, and I'm sure you'd agree, is they raised £1 million at the time of IPO, and they actually listed it. The first day of trading was on Friday, and they've got a market cap of £1 million. Now, remember the rule change last year, I think it was the back end of last year, the city made some changes, or the FCA made some changes to overhaul the UK listing rules, and that came into force. And what they effectively said is that on the main market, a company must have a valuation of £30 million to actually be listed and chosen on that platform. The only that if they didn't have that valuation, then the other alternatives are obviously the AIM market or the Aquis Growth market, which is trying to encourage the smaller companies from the 700,000 Now, the minimum before that was £700,000 cap. So get that in your mind. So £700,000, they shifted the goalpost to £30 million. And that was the new threshold. So Aura Renewables have only got a market cap of 1 million and they're on the main market. Now, obviously, the reason why they're on there with that valuation is because when they started the process, they changed the rules. So effectively, they got in on the fact that they were, that, you know, the prospectus was submitted during the rule change announcement so that they were allowed to list with that valuation. Now, what does that mean, Kev? Do you think that means that they could be valued anywhere from 1 million to 30 million now because of they're effectively a SPAC and a cash shell?
Yeah, I think 30 million is a bit of a stretch, but I think to say that they could be valued between 3, 4, 5 million seems very realistic because you would need to raise 30 million to be in the same position as them. Now, we have had a discussion actually with Harmony Capital, who are the main backers behind this as well. So never mind the SPAC situation, the Harmony Capital thing in the future, these guys are going to be extremely well backed to find the right deals and put the right deals in this. But there is a short-term opportunity here because, I mean, you've seen some of the SPACs that have come on the market in the last while, and they've been worth several million pounds, whether it's 2, 3, 4, 5 million pounds. And these guys have got £1 million in cash. So, yeah, it was up 70% on Friday. So it finished at 17p, I think it was, and started at 10p. So, but I can see 30, 40p probably in the next couple of weeks. Easy. Yeah. Because it's
the thing with it is, as you say, is it's very unusual to get a company valuation of a million, just for argument's sake, £1 million cash, £1 million cap. Obviously, that was the value at the IPO at 10p, and it finished it rightly, as you say, at the 17 pence mark or something, yeah, around that, so 70% up. But the other thing to note is that there wasn't many people trading it on Friday, simply because a lot of these brokers, you know, the IIs of this world, the Hargreaves Lansdown, just didn't have it listed. You know, we've seen that so many times where you go and buy a stock and it's not available. So I think next week we'll start to see more people dripping into it because you can actually trade it, I think, from next week now. I saw on II that it wasn't listed on the search. But if you went in there and typed ARA and then hit the tab button on your computer, you could then trade it. You could actually buy that through the II platform. And I'm pretty sure that Hargreaves Lansdown, you couldn't trade it on the app, but you could trade it on the computer, you know, via the computer webpage. Yeah. Rather, you know. So I think you'll see more liquidity. And I just don't think it's going to be that long. I get the feeling that it's not going to be that long before they do make some sort of acquisition. I mean, what, they've been planning this for quite a long time, haven't they, in terms of the actual listing? It's been going on for quite some time now. All right, on that note, have a great weekend and we'll catch up in a week.
Yep, thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.